All right. This is another one of those TxDOT grant subsidized classes. If you would, please, I'll start this over here, and we'll make sure it makes the rounds all the way over to the other side. Our next presenter this afternoon is Lester Rorick. Lester is the presiding judge in the city of Pasadena. He previously had the position of first assistant city attorney for the city of Pasadena, city attorney for the city of Pearland, and city attorney for the city of Shore Acres. He also has had his own private law practice for 18 years. Please welcome Judge Lester Rorick.
Thank you, Judge. The true introduction is really this. Hi, my name's Les, and I'm a compulsive volunteer. I volunteer for the Pasadena Livestock Show and Rodeo Association. I volunteer for the San Jacinto Day Foundation, the Strawberry Festival in Pasadena. I volunteer for the Texas Municipal Courts Education Association. I volunteer for the Texas Municipal Courts Association, and who knows what else. Now, I wasn't always this way. In fact, my formative training in the area of volunteerism came at the hands of the United States government when I served my country. And as any veteran will tell you, there is the first, last, and only rule about volunteering when it comes to military service. Never volunteer for nothing. Now, most of us learned that the hard way, like me, but we only had to learn it once. And so it's difficult, if you've been trained the same way that I appear many of us have been trained, to break old habits, because they were such a very good idea at the time. And now suddenly we want somebody to tell us this is no longer a good idea. We need to volunteer for everything that comes down the pike. Well, my role today is to encourage you to volunteer for what I think is a very worthwhile program. It is driving on the right side of the road, and it is a cooperative venture from the Texas Department of Transportation, the Texas Municipal Courts Education Center, the State Bar of Texas, and Law Focused Education, Inc. Now, why should we volunteer? Well, I can think of all kinds of good reasons. Why should we not volunteer? And we bring up our first topic. I know, and some of you have been a judge a lot longer than I have, that the first time that anybody asks us to do anything, we always pass it through that filter that we call the Code of Judicial Conduct. Now, the Code of Judicial Conduct is a handy little thing. It helps us when we want it to help us, and it helps us when we don't want it to help us. Or said a simple way, you know, I'd like to help you out, Judge Ellsworth, I really would. But I think I may have an ethical issue here. Now, Ryan Turner wants me to tell you that no judge has ever been disciplined in the history of this state for having volunteered for an educational purpose. All right, I say that again. No judge has ever been volunteered in the history of this state for assisting in an educational purpose. So, I want you to get away from the limitation here, and I want to talk about the license in this case, that is the Code of Judicial Conduct. The Code of Judicial Conduct, as all of us know, has more thou shalt nots than the Ten Commandments. There are a few exceptions, however, and one that we'll want to focus on today is Canon 4B. This, you will notice, is a permissive as opposed to a prohibiting canon of judicial conduct. In fact, it says a judge may speak, write, and do other such things, lecture and participate in extrajudicial activities concerning the law, the legal system, and the administration of justice in non-legal systems. This is in accordance with the general preamble of the code that says that it shall state basic standards that govern the conduct of all judges and provide assistance to judges in conducting themselves. Now, when we get to this idea of speaking, writing, lecturing, and participating, keeping in mind that you're in the unlikely ever to be called into question about this, there are some things that we need to talk about that will help us temper the way that we present ourselves, particularly in a classroom environment. And there are several ethics opinions that will assist us in this regard. Opinion number 22, for example, teaches that a district judge may be a moderator of a short biweekly radio show that focuses on the duties and functions of a court. Opinion number 63 says that a judge may, once again, write articles concerning the improvement of the law and the administration of justice. On the other hand, opinion number 66 teaches that a judge may not participate in a program designed to show the difficulties and shortcomings of cross-examination to assistant district attorneys, even though the judge did not identify himself as a judge while doing so. And the reason for this is it may show a preference or prejudice for one side of the case or the other. Topically, for this time of year when the legislature has recently been in session and may go back, a judge is free to draft legislation that will affect the laws in the future. So, once again, you are encouraged to go ahead and participate. You have a few limitations, and one of them is to avoid impropriety and the appearance of impropriety in the judge's activities. It's difficult to imagine in the environment that I will send you to the intermediate and the elementary and the high school level that you're going to get into anything that's improprietous, but we'll leave that to be decided. Performing judicial duties of the office impartially and diligently. Now, here what we want to do is we want to focus on the prohibition against judges commenting on pending or impending litigation in their courts. This is the general subset of this rule that most likely could get you in trouble if you end up in a classroom. And let me tell you how that might work. I had the good fortune when I first got involved in this program of going to one of several education centers around the state for the purpose of seeing how the teachers are trained in the substance of this course. It was an interesting time for me because the program that I'm going to discuss with you today seeks to give guidance to school teachers, whether they be elementary, high school, or intermediate, and give them some information and some classroom materials that they can take to their classroom, fully developed, fully formed, and simply work on the subjects of traffic safety. In any event, I digress. I went to the class, and I was introduced as the judge, and I sat quietly in the corner because I was frankly afraid that somebody would ask me a question I couldn't answer. And in due course, of course, everybody started raising their hand. And it became quickly apparent to me that none of these folks was making up a hypothetical question. You get the point. I got a kid in my class who's got a PI. What should he do? Punt? These are the kinds of things that you might reasonably expect to have happen in a classroom. Well, how does this bear on pending or impending litigation? Well, depending on how large a town you're in, that kid in the high school is likely going to have a case pending where? In your court. Okay, well, you see how this works. So, that's probably the biggest caveat I would tell you from having been down this road a couple of times in the teacher training. Please be careful that you don't step out and talk about something that is impending or pending in your court, and could be either one, because these folks who ask the questions likely do not ask them in the abstract. All right. Conduct your judicial duties or your extrajudicial duties and activities to minimize the conflict of interest, not something that you're likely to have happen, and refrain from inappropriate political activity. Now, in this regard, a judge is admonished not to make pledges about specific cases, classes of cases, or specific classes of litigants in the court. Same kind of thing that we talked about before. Be careful, once again, because your audience in the classroom environment is liable to be the same folks who come before you as a judge. In summary, you should promote confidence in the integrity of the judiciary. You should abstain from comment on pending or impending cases in your court. You should not do anything that casts doubt on your capacity to act impartially, and you should not make any promises or pledges regarding classes of cases or classes of litigants. Short of that, I suggest to you that the admonition that Ryan Turner asked me to convey to all of us is very, very applicable here. You will not be disciplined. You will not get in trouble. Rule 4 is intended to enable you, not prohibit you from doing something. And so please take advantage of the opportunity to be a part of your community that is more than just a judge, but actively engaged in the education of our young people in matters that affect traffic safety. In fiscal year 2007, juvenile activity in Texas municipal courts was over 180,000 cases. This came as a surprise to me because 179,000 of them were in Pasadena, Texas. I have no idea which one of y'all had the other 1,000, but I'm convinced I had the majority of these things. And I know you feel the same way. Why? Because we seem to be consumed a lot in our business with juvenile cases, leaving us very little time to get involved in the education of the juveniles themselves. 154,000 involving traffic safety related issues. This is a big deal, and it is a big problem when it comes to teaching. Lisa Robinson, who is the person on staff at the Education Center who handles this training, came to visit me in my court one afternoon, and she brought her kids, lovely lady. And I don't know what she was expecting, folks, but she came in, and here they come, you know, 250 fresh faces from the streets, sitting down, packing the courtroom, and 2 hours later, Lisa said, "Whoa, I guess you don't have much chance to educate in this environment." Answer, yeah. No question about it, Lisa, because if you get in the education process, particularly in courts with higher volumes like mine, you will likely get stoned from the peanut gallery before it's all over. This is not a good time, at least practically, to be in the business of talking to young people about traffic safety. And this is the niche that driving on the right side of the road will fill. I think Lisa came to that conclusion very quickly and with great clarity once she saw how I actually have to work to get my business done, she realized more than ever the importance of what it is that she was setting out to do. So, 31% of the population of Texas is 19 years of age or younger. Now, a certain percentage of these people must of necessity appear in our court, sometimes accompanied by an adult parent or guardian, but a larger percentage or a substantial percentage has the same option as any other adult. Show up at the window, mail it in, email it, whatever you all do in your court, you may never see them. And if you don't see them, even if you had the opportunity to educate them, you couldn't avail yourself of that opportunity. Now, here is how it's going to work. The Driving on the Right Side of the Road program is calculated to reach 66,000 youth in our state on an annual basis. Now, it's hard for me to imagine how that happens. And I was surprised when I got involved in the program to find out that scattered about the states, there are 20 educational centers that are in the business of educating teachers. Do we have any former school teachers in our, or present school teachers even? Yeah. Well, you may know about this, a couple. I didn't know there were such things. And I was invited to go to one on the west side of Houston. I got there, I thought I was in the Pentagon. It was so big. I swear, it seemed like the size of this hotel. And there was a never-ending maze of corridors and classrooms and school teachers being educated in the stuff of school teaching, CLE for school teachers, if you will. One of those programs was this program, and there were two teacher educators there, and the two teacher educators were in the business of trying to teach 20 teachers. And those 20 teachers then got in the business of educating a total of 150 students apiece. So it was 20 times 2, ends up with 440 times 150, 66,000 people is the goal of the education process. And I will tell you, having been to one of these education centers, this material is well received is eagerly received by the teachers who were in attendance. I don't have any particular teaching experience. I taught junior college a couple of years, but that was more of a weekly thing and, you know, not an everyday, what are we going to do tomorrow kind of environment. The teachers that I saw just glommed onto this stuff, started ripping it apart, and they were fabricating their lesson plans and their teaching plans even as they were sitting there in the classroom thinking of how to do it. They were glad to have it, eager to have it, and eager at the possibility that they might actually be able to call upon a judge in their community to come and assist them in the presentation of this material. All right, well, how does that work? Well, over here on the other side of the table, you will see what the activities and what the resources are, and at the risk of cutting in front of my own image, each person who gets involved is going to get one of these Driving on the Right Side of the Road books. There is a curriculum book that looks like this, and all the material in this book is on the TMCEC website. Are you all regular visitors to the TMCEC website? Well, I'll give you the links in due course here, and we will be able to show you where to find these things if you're unable to get a hold of Lisa and get the stuff sent to you. Also, you'll get a bunch of driving safety handbooks. These are available at the end of the class if you want them. And there are other materials here, like these maps, that we'll look at more in detail in a few moments. In short, the Education Center and its cooperating entities have gone out of their way to be sure that you are in a position to be fully prepared to go into the classroom environment. Now, the classroom environment right now is 4th, 7th, and high school levels. There's a program for next year which will expand it to 5th, 8th, and 12th graders. And you can see in talking about these things that there are any kind of possibilities when it comes to teaching. You may end up with kids this big, or you may end up with kids who are bigger than you are. One of the things that I would encourage you to do, if as and when you are contacted by a teacher, is find out who it is you're going to talk to and find out what the source material is. That way you can be prepared. You won't be like me cowering behind the table because you didn't know what they were going to talk about and scared to death they might ask you something that you might be embarrassed about. So take a look at the stuff. It's fairly simple. It's fairly straightforward. And I promise you, you'll find it interesting in many respects. Take a look at one of these things. This is the Our Town map, and I think that's been passed out to you prior to the time that we began the class. The Our Town map serves two important functions when it comes to teaching young people, and this is primarily for younger students. Number one, it helps people to identify safe and unsafe behaviors. Now, I'm going to emphasize the fact that we're talking about safe and unsafe, not necessarily legal and illegal. If everything I ever did that was stupid was illegal, I would be in jail today instead of in this classroom, and I think you all know what I'm talking about. So, the idea here is to pick something safe, but the idea further is to be able to locate and identify the safe or unsafe activity by the coordinates. We got the A through N on the top. We got the 1 through 20 on the bottom. There is a little grading sheet which enables the student to identify the activity and locate it by saying A1, D4, whatever. So I'm going to ask you to take a minute and take a look at the map. And anybody at any time, just go ahead, raise your hand, give me an example of a safe behavior and locate it according to this, the grid on top and on the side of the map. Just anyone. Oh, there's got to be one. Fortunately, I can't help you. I don't have one of those things. Judge Ellsworth? I know you've already talked. That's why I'm doing it. Find me a safe behavior, Judge. Come on. 5E. What is it? Good idea. Any other safe behaviors? I'm sorry? A17, what do we got? Right here. How about an unsafe behavior? Well, there's a bunch of them. All these kids right down here are just, they're having a wonderful time with unsafe behaviors. You can pick one, they're doing it. B10. There's an unsafe behavior. Well, now, seems like a good idea to me, yes. Remember, please, there is a word for this. I didn't know it till I went to this court or this course. You know what they call it? Skitching. Has anybody heard of skitching? That's what they call it. One of the things, and I think this well illustrates it, is some of this stuff, particularly at the elementary level, gets us involved in things that we don't see all the time in our courts. And I'm going to point some of this stuff out to you in just a few minutes. That may seem like a really good or dumb idea to us, given the years of experience we have. I might suggest to you that a fourth grader being, 9 or 10 years old, may be a good thing to point out. You know, some kids don't figure that stuff out until they fall off the skateboard. The point here is that there are any number of safe and unsafe behaviors to be found on this map. Every time I look at it, I see something I haven't seen before. If the teacher in your course is going to use the map, well, you've got one. If you don't have one, there's one on the website that you can pull up. Or ask the teacher to send you one by mail, or go by and pick one up, and you'll be able to be better equipped to talk to the students about this. This is going to give you some idea, first of all, how the teachers are using these maps in the classroom, and second of all, the level of the student that you're talking about. The skateboard is a wonderful example of dumb activities. I don't know how it's going to play with some of these kids, though. They may think it's just a really neat idea. I thought it was a really neat idea to ride behind a car with roller skates on it one time. Now I think I have to wear a helmet to do that. But these are what? Fourth graders, probably. All right. Other possibilities, they have a traffic safety matchup game. Once again, this is calculated to talk to the younger students, and it has to do with matching the safe and unsafe behaviors and can be played in any number variety of ways. Clearly, the with and without the handlebar use is something that you can talk to kids about. Now, they've got a TxDOT Land Rules of the Road game. This game is played in the usual manner you have with a spinner. You spin the wheel, and depending on whether you're able to answer a question or not answer a question, you can move forward. If you answer the question correctly, well, you get to move forward the number of spaces that are appointed by the wheel. The ultimate goal, of course, is to reach them all. If, on the other hand, you should get it wrong, you may end up in the municipal court, and you may be fined and lose your time at turn. Now, seems pretty straightforward, seems pretty simple, but these are the possibilities. We have the automobile, we have the bicycle. Do y'all have a lot of bicycle cases in your court? I have one kind of bicycle case in my court. Riding a bicycle at night with no headlamp in a neighborhood you shouldn't be in at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know what I'm saying. That's pretty much the extent of my bicycle cases, and I see them all in the jail in the morning. So it's not something that I keep up with. I just don't. Pedestrian cases. I don't see a lot of pedestrian cases in my court. Well, I do see one. Walking in the improved portion of the roadway when a sidewalk is provided at 2 o'clock in the morning when you should be somewhere else. Same answer. I see all these cases in the jail as well. But beyond that, I have very little understanding of the law of pedestrian traffic. And I certainly have no understanding of the law, if any, of inline skating. A word to the wise. These are the kinds of questions that can make you look pretty silly and make you feel pretty silly if you haven't taken a moment to kind of go through the questions and answers ahead of time. By the way, the reference material provided does have both the questions and the answers. If you know that, you'll be able to be a leg up by the time you get to the classroom. Just as an example, folks, and not by way of limitation, listen to some of the questions. At what age does a child no longer have to ride in a car safety seat? Dead silence. Yeah. Was that changed this year? Do you know? I haven't done my legislative update. If you're like me, we started practicing law back before they had computers and things. I used to drive myself flat crazy because I'd read something that was a pending piece of legislation and I was convinced that it passed. The governor didn't sign it. I spent a whole year looking for it. You ever do that? So I have steadfastly and studiously over the years stayed away from everything I wasn't personally interested in until the governor had or had not signed it. That way I don't get in that conundrum of what did I do with it. It was 5. I guess it still is. How hot could a closed car get when parked in direct sunlight for only 15 minutes? Walking around knowledge for me. How about you? 131 to 172 degrees. If you're like me and you're cold natured, I know that because I take my coffee break in the car out in the parking lot to warm up because the ladies in my office have it cranked down to 68 degrees and I spend the whole morning doing this. I tell people, I now know why judges wear robes. It's real simple. They're just trying to keep warm. Where in the car is the safest place for children under 12 or 12 and under to ride? That's an easy one, the back seat. But how much should a child weigh before he or she can safely sit in the back seat with the safety belt fastened? Anybody know that one? Yeah, 80. You know how I figured that one out? I went to buy a child safety seat for my new granddaughter this weekend. And as we were perusing the aisles in Walmart, I saw the little sign. I said, this is good for kids up to 80 pounds. I said, oh, I remember now. I would not know that. It's not one of those things that they came up with. There was a bill in the hopper about making kids use those up to 80 pounds. Or up to what, 4 feet 10 inches? Did that pass? It did pass. Good. My secretary has to use a booster seat to get to work in the morning now. All right. Nearly 2/3 of all children killed in traffic accidents were riding with a driver who was drinking alcohol. Slam dunk. Yeah. How about this one? This will tease you. How far back from the curb should you stand while waiting for the school bus? 9. Well, that's good. 10 feet. That's not the kind of stuff I remember, nor do I remember there was a rule about it. As I remember, most kids were playing in the street while waiting for the school bus and hoping not to be run over. Once again, the point here is that some of these questions don't fit conveniently into our everyday experience in the practice of municipal law. So, I give you these things simply to tell you that there are some things that we need to worry about in terms of getting ready. Now, on a more sophisticated level, my able assistant is going to come to the front, and we're going to talk about one of a couple, what'd you do, dude? There we go. Inline games, or online games, that you can play in the classroom. This one is fun. This one is called the Pick Six game. And the object here is to pick a jury. Now, we have to put aside for the moment that this is a procedurally incorrect game, conceded at the outset. Our goal here is not to eliminate the offending jurors, but rather to pick six jurors who best suit our purposes and who best suit the case at hand. This is the case at hand, and I will tell you that the fact scenario was contrived in the diabolical mind of Ryan Turner. It therefore has all kinds of twists and turns that you might not otherwise expect to find. But as I read it the first time, I was eager to get to the jury picking part. And so what I did was I read through the facts without paying a whole lot of attention to them. And then as I went back the second time and read them, more than anything else for the purpose of getting ready to discuss them with a class of judges, it occurred to me that Ryan had woven into the fabric of this little fact scenario any number of issues that might reasonably be discussed with young people of a high school age who are or are about to get on our streets and drive automobiles. I don't know how legible this is in the back of the room, so indulge me, if you will, as I go through the facts with you. Johnny Jr. got his Texas driver's license and a new car for his 16th birthday. I didn't. To celebrate his birthday, he and his friends went cruising around town in the new car. While riding around, Johnny got a call on his cell phone from his brother. It seems that their grandfather had gone out of town for the weekend and had given the brothers permission to have a few friends over to his house to, quote, hang out. With the use of text messaging, within 3 hours, 30 people under the age of 21, including Johnny and his friend, were at the grandfather's house. After a while, Johnny decided there were too many people at the house, and it was just a matter of time till the police came. So he left. As he was driving away, Johnny heard sirens and saw a police car. The police in the car activated sirens and lights, and Johnny pulled his car over. When the officer approached the car and asked to see Johnny's license and insurance, Johnny readily produced both documents. The officer asked Johnny if he just left the party. And when Johnny answered in the affirmative, the officer instructed him to get out of the car. Johnny complied and then was informed he was under arrest. Charges were for violating Section 106.041 of the Alcohol Beverage Code. In other words, driving under the influence by a minor. After Johnny left the party, more than 10 police officers arrived there and issued 28 citations for minors in possession of alcohol. The house was littered with beer bottles, and the liquor cabinet was found empty. Neil, who was unidentified otherwise, will have his case heard later. All right, that's your fact scenario, and once again, I could not resist the temptation to jump through it and skip right to the jury selection process. But let's take a look. Are there other teaching opportunities in this fact scenario? I'm going to suggest to you I found at least 10 of them, and maybe I missed a few. To begin, now, Johnny was how old? 16. And he just got what besides a new car? He just got his Texas driver's license. And what is the first thing he did? What every other kid always does. He got on his cell phone. Do we have law that governs us here? What is it? Prohibition against minors within 6 months of obtaining their driving license from using what? Cell phones, or as the statute said, electronic devices, I think. Yeah, a wireless communication device. And that would include, therefore, I think, not only the cell phone communication, but the even more dangerous text messaging communication. You know, you're going to have in any high school this very fact scenario. You're going to have young people with new driver's licenses, hopefully new cars, and cell phones. My grandkids have already got them. They can do things I can't do. So you know by the time they get to high school, they are really well equipped to be doing this. So I think this is something that bears a little mentioning, particularly when it comes to high school kids. All right. Johnny decided that there was too many people, and he left. By the way, before we leave this, in the same section, when you've got people within 6 months of getting their license, we have a non-violation here. We have the fact that Johnny, assuming we have the right scenario, after dark and all that, had only one passenger under the age of 21 with him. If he'd had more than one, would there be another violation? Yeah. He only had one in this case. Anyway, Johnny decided that it was not a good place to be. So as he was driving away, the expected happened. What was it? He heard the siren, saw the lights, and Johnny pulled over. Does the officer have a reason for pulling Johnny over? And is this a good thing to be talking to young people about? That's a thought question. I don't know the answer to this one. Well, the statute says that the officer can't pull the guy over simply for the purpose of affirming that he is in violation of this section, we know that, is a discussion of probable cause appropriate for high school kids? It seems to me, apart from what the statute says, this is one of those areas where we can get off on the slippery slope, because the questions that you're likely to provoke are likely to be the questions that come from the playground in the parking lot rather than from the fertile minds of adolescents. So, anyway, he pulled Johnny over and asked him for his license and insurance. Johnny produced both documents. I think this is a good time to talk about financial responsibility. We can forget the nuances of whether this is a good charge or not a good charge, but financial responsibility, if your court is like my court, what is the percentage of cases before you for lack of financial responsibility? A whole bunch. And I don't know that young people do or do not know this. I know that I didn't get a license and use of the family car until I was able to pay for the extra on the insurance. Whether these kids do or not, I don't know, but they should know about it, that's for sure. All right, when he left the party, Johnny admitted he left the party, and he was put under arrest for what? Minor driving under the influence. Does that require that Johnny be drunk, intoxicated, or what? Yeah, detectable amount of alcohol. Is this something that you might want to talk about with young people? Yeah, because this gets pretty tough for somebody who's just had enough to make a detectable amount. Anybody remember what the penalty is for this? It is first a Class C misdemeanor, so we have a fine of up to $500. We have community service. How much? Not fewer than 20 nor more than 40 hours of community service. We have alcohol awareness. Yeah. And what is the DPS likely to do with Johnny's driver's license when he gets convicted? Suck it back up for a while. Sometimes I think that discussing penalties is a pretty good idea, because I don't know about your court, but I know a lot of the juveniles we see in our court have this notion, well, it's juvenile court, nothing's going to happen to me. Yeah, you ever heard that? I've got a number of judges who work for me because we have a pretty big volume court, and different judges have different predilections. And sometimes I've filled in for my usual juvenile judge, and people have come up and said, well, you know, this isn't fair, Judge. Nothing's supposed to happen here. Well, I think that's probably a bad impression, and this is one way of correcting a bad impression. This is a very serious matter, and it should be that way. 28 kids ultimately got citations for minor in possession. Anything we need to talk about there? Yeah, can we prove all 28 did it? There is an excellent article, folks. This may be not something you want to share with high school kids, but you can get it from the Education Center. Sufficiency of Evidence in Possession in MIP Cases by Charles Chuck Bubening, George Herman Mann Professor, Texas Tech University. Have y'all seen this? It was taught a few years ago. It's really, really excellent. It is a two-page synopsis of all the law that you ever wanted to know when you get these, I got 28 kids all charged with possession of one keg cases, and sets out the several touchstones that you might want to look at to determine whether, in fact, you can convict one, none, or all of them. I have a copy. I'll be happy to share it with you. I think Hope has a copy and probably can email it to you. Now, it's in the book? Oh, she put it in the book. That's what happened. I gave it to her. Look at that article. It's terrific if you haven't already looked at it. That's one of those things, when you get one of those, boy, that one's on my bench, I promise you that, because I can't remember. Now, after 28 citations, the house was littered with beer bottles. Is there anything else that we see in this fact scenario that makes sense for kids to know about? What about Grandpa? Old Papa. Is he in trouble here? Maybe or maybe not. Sir? All under the age. what it says. You think old Pawpaw's got a problem? You know, there's a provision in the code, 106.06, that says a person commits an offense if he purchases an alcohol beverage for or gives or makes available an alcohol beverage to a minor with criminal negligence. This is clearly a fact question. But Papa told him to come on over and hang out and left the liquor cabinet open. My city has an ordinance that deals with this particular thing. It's probably been preempted by this section of the Alcohol Beverage Code. But what they're doing, and this is a common problem around the states, and I'm sure you have it in your town as well, where parents tacitly sponsor, you know, a party where there's a keg or where they alcohol beverages are available, and mom and pop seek to keep the peace but don't otherwise want to take any credit or responsibility for the alcohol beverage being on site. All right, well, now you've got the fact scenario, you've got the possibilities. Let's meet the jury. Now, what's fun about this game is, he's telling me, you want me to select for the prosecution or the defense, huh? I leave it up to you, folks. You want to be prosecutors or defense lawyers? Prosecutors, raise your hand. Boy, come on, don't be timid. I don't have anything against prosecutors. How about defense lawyers? All right, prosecutors win out, I guess, and we have, we'll do both. Anyway, here comes the venira. This is really fun. You've got a couple of things here. You've got your judge up here, and you've got a little jury box here. And in this venira, you will have things that relate to each particular juror. Your task in doing this game is to pick six. Pick six jurors who best suit your frame of mind as a prosecutor or who best suits your frame of mind as a defendant. Now, if you get a slam dunk on one of these guys or ladies, you're going to get 5 points. If you absolutely miss it, you're going to get one. A perfect score is 30, and the idea is to either get 30 or get as close to 30 as you can. My recommendation, folks, is to play this game in private, in your office, before you go to class, and if you want to, you can have a witness to score for you, or not, as you please. I don't think you'll find it too taxing, but it's one of those things that you might want to take a look at ahead of time. Let's take, for example, we decided to be a prosecutor, huh? All right, let's take a look at juror number two. Now, remember what we've got, and here comes your factors to be considered. She's a female, 35 years old, owns a job placement service. She's a Protestant, married 10 years, 2 children in elementary school. Husband is an assistant district attorney. She is the president of the PTA. I didn't give you a tip there, did I? President of the PTA. She has no prior jury duty. You like her or you don't like her? Don't like her. I got one don't like her. Who likes her? Who likes her a lot? Lots of people like her. Put her in the jury box. So there she is. She just pops up in our jury box. Now, let's take a look next at juror number 19. We're going to scroll down. We're going to find 19. Now, of course, obviously what you have to do if you're playing the game from scratch, you'll have to look at all of them. She's a female, 48 years old, homemaker, Episcopalian, married, one adult daughter. Husband is a corporate attorney, and she is the president of the local MAD chapter. Remember, we're not cutting juries here. We're selecting them. Who likes her for a prosecution juror? Yeah, I think most of us do. Now, on the other side of the equation, let's take a look, if you would, sir, at number 20. Number 20 is my personal favorite juror. He is a male, 28 years of age. He's a professional artist. No religion is given. He's single. He was stopped by the police and given a sobriety test on 2 occasions, but never charged. Anybody want him as a prosecution juror? Oh, come on. Please? Now, clearly, if you were picking for the defense, this is one of those guys that you would really like to single out for inclusion in your jury. Now, what I'm going to do is let my able assistant, at random, he cheats, by the way, pick four other people, and we're going to pop them in the jury box and see how this comes out. I played this game several times with these folks, and somehow or another, they always score perfectly. Except this time he won't, just to show that I'm... Yeah, look at him. He's got it memorized. The process, of course, is not complete until you have put six folks in the jury box. And so we have done it. When you do that, you click on none and voila, your score is 22. And then what they do is they give you a synopsis of the ones that you may not have done so well. Like take juror number 5. 1 point for the state. This juror had previously served on a DWI jury and acquitted the defendant. Probably not the kind of guy you want as a prosecution juror. All right, that is the Pick 6 game. Coming up next year, by the way, there's going to be a second generation in this game, and it's going to be called the Pick 12 game. I've not played it yet. I haven't seen the new stuff, but if it promises to be any much as fun as this game, I'm sure that I'll enjoy it, and so will you. There is another game online right now. It's called There Ought to Be a Law Computer Game. This game is equally as challenging and as much fun, and tests your knowledge of the legislative process in the state. Probably something you ought to brush up on before you go to class. 3-3. Got that. What we do here is we have somebody who was injured by a person who was using a wireless device in a traffic accident. And the student brings to the attention of her teacher that there, quote, should be a law, there ought to be a law. So the process then goes through the stages of drafting the legislation, getting somebody to carry the bill, discusses with you how it gets through committee, what number of votes it needs to get through the House, what number of votes it needs to get through the Senate, and what options the governor has, and what happens if the governor exercises one or none of the options. Now, everything that we've talked about, including the links to the online games, can be found at the Texas Municipal Court Education Center website. Go up here to the TxDOT icon. Click on the icon. It will bring you over to Municipal Traffic Safety Initiatives. Right down here, about a quarter of the way down, you will see driving on the right side of the road. That is the topic at hand. Click on driving on the right side of the road. You will find that you have the level 1, level 2, level 3 instruction, and you have some other things, including a link to the Pick 6 game that we just played. Click on the Pick 6 link. It will take you over to the Law Focused Education website, and you will find Pick 6. You will find There Ought to Be a Law. Click on Pick 6, and that will get you where we were earlier, get you the possibility of playing the game either privately with a witness or in a classroom full of high school students. I think, notwithstanding the fact that it's not exactly a good mirror of the way the jury selection process is conducted, that's not altogether a bad idea, because it gives you the opportunity to say how it really is done. And you get a little teaching opportunity there too. So, here's what I want you to do. I want you to sign up and become a volunteer in your community. I want you to know your role, know your grade level, and I want you to look back through the ethical problems, which are few, before you go into the class. And I want you to have a good time. This is a fun thing to do. I've had a great time with it. I've had a good time going through the game with the judges this year and going through the program with the judges. If you have any questions, my boss is Lisa Robertson. I have no idea what CFLE means, but whatever it is, that's her. That's her website. She is the great administrator. She is the guru of this stuff. She will get this material into your hands, and she will do everything she can to make your time and your assignment more fun, more pleasurable, and a greater opportunity for both you and the students that you reach. Now, the hospitality suite, Judge, is 141?
Yeah, we'll
see that. You're getting a little over, you're getting a little anxious.
Don't go to the hospitality suite the next hour, okay?
Yeah, hospitality is one. Thank you, Judge Rourke.
Well, wait a minute. I'm not finished.
You're not through yet?
I got one more thing to say. On behalf of Judge Ellsworth, who doesn't seem to be able to get up on his feet, do this, please, folks. Take advantage of the resources that are made available to you by the Texas Municipal Courts Association and the Texas Municipal Courts Education Center. You know, I've been practicing law for 32 years. I've been doing it as long as they've had CLE. I've been to lots of CLE. I've never been to better CLE at a cheaper price than what you get in judges' schools, and that's simply the truth. All this stuff is done on a voluntary basis. It's done for CLE. It's done just for judicial education, but it's always been done very well. Hope Lockridge and Ryan Turner and them just put together a crackerjack job. And if you've never been through this process as an educator, as a teacher, believe me, they make you jump through the hoops. So support the Texas Municipal Courts Association. Support the TMCEC. Visit the website often. I find something new every time. I hope to see you in the Hospitality Center, room 141, whenever Judge Ellsworth tells you it's good to go.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Judge. Okay, if you're going to stay in this room, you're looking at Texas Sure, which is a technical innovation in vehicle insurance verification. And across the way at the waterfront room, DPS Driver's Responsibility Program at 4 o'clock. Thank you.